This is Curious Lightning, curiously connecting us to one another in the environments we inhabit. I'm Dakota Clearwater Lacroix. If you want to listen to any past shows, find us on the web at www.curiouslightning.com. Post a comment, help support the program, or simply stay in touch. If you were a person waking up in Georgia, Vermont, or California, there's a good chance you would be listening to the same DJ speaking in that voice. You know the one I'm talking about. Spinning those same pre-programmed playlists of the top 40 songs with local news pretty much non-existent. Yeah, you got it. So I was curious when I found myself captivated by an FM station tucked in the foothills of the Cascade Mountains that had brought me on a sonic journey to Texas to join in on a bit of honky-tonk and then quickly flung me into a small African village for a dose of tribal drumming. All within minutes. This is rare for the commercial radio landscape. KTRT, or The Root as it's known to listeners, hosts a cast of characters projecting onto airwaves from cellars, secret locations, and mystery motels. There's a blind DJ weaving whimsical stories and high schoolers offering up a sonic feast. All of it's put together on a shoestring budget in this age of mega media outlets. The Root is a station with multiple personalities. It's exactly what its founder strives for. Curious to find out more, I trekked out to KTRT's single room studio and caught up with Don Ashford.
So how the hell did you end up here?
How did I end up here? You know, I was born and raised in Washington, but I at one point in my life, I was married and had kids, and I had a house and a mortgage and different things, which weren't really fitting very good. So we sold all that and kind of went in on a farm with a bunch of other people, and I lasted, I don't know, maybe 2 months at communarianism.
Was it just a bunch of naked people running around?
No, not really.
Gluing beads on each other's cars? Or?
No, it wasn't really that, but it was in that day. But, it was a bunch of friends who were kind of in the same boat. We just had a little bit of equity built up, and we bought a beautiful place. It was marvelous, but there's a few too many people, and because I always worked at home, you know, I got everybody's firewood. I built all the fences. I took care of, you know, all the animals. I was home, and those guys were out, you know, finishing concrete or hanging wallboard or something. So, yeah, I wasn't having a lot of fun there. My tools were being borrowed by everybody else, and I didn't learn that in kindergarten.
Well, what was going on in the world at that time that would say, okay, let me gather up with some other folks make a living situation of it?
Well, I think I'm an old hippie. And so when I was a kid, that's what I was doing. I just, you know, lived in a teepee. And when I met Sarah, we lived in a teepee. And I think even had our first kid. Well, it didn't deliver it there or anything, but we were living in one. And so I'd always just wanted to camp out. And so that's what I did. We sold the house, went to the farm, didn't like it. It had a little bit of money left over, so we went on vacation and never came back. We actually kind of disappeared one night and never came back to that farm. And we would visit, but we never moved back. We actually moved away, drove away in the night, and ended up in southern Oregon and had many adventures there, but I missed Washington. So when we got, we decided, okay, after several years, we're coming back, and we had some friends, actually from that same farming endeavor, who had moved up to the Methow. And we, at the time, we'd accumulated a bunch of horses, and we wanted to kind of start up my pottery business again, and so we needed a, you know, kind of a rotating clientele, and we thought, okay, kind of a tourist town, but horsey, not Bavarian. You know what I'm saying?
Your son dove, and one of the dove-isms, as I see here, was that he had on his blog was Momentum of the People, and I'm seeing now where that genetically comes from.
That little bugger, he's kind of left me with a legacy here with the radio, which is funny because I don't play music, I don't sing, I don't know how, but I did have a lot of cowboy music CDs that I'd got, and so when we were here, and actually Dove had been sick, and we went to, we were doing hospitals and stuff, and we came back home one time, and this radio had started in Twisp. And there was a guy on the radio, Cowboy George. You'd have loved him. He was the authentic thing. He was really cool. And he played that kind of music. So one day I went down and I gave him all my CDs to play because he'd like that kind of music too. And
vinyl or CDs?
Both. I had both. And that's it's kind of an odd collection of things. There's not a lot of cowboy music, but I had collected it. And then he did a clothing collection. There'd been a flood back in like Nebraska or something. So he got somebody's horse trailer and filled it up. And he goes, "Hey, well, why don't you take my show while I'm gone?" And so that's how it happened. That's how I got into it. And it was like early in the morning. It was like 4 a.m. when he was gone, I would have to go till like 8. And I would tape every show. And then I'd go home and I'd make pottery and listen to what I did. And hated it. I couldn't stand it. It was just like I died 1,000 deaths, swore that I would never do that again tomorrow. I mean, so I learned through the burning fire of embarrassment, I thought.
Well, I mean, there must be a place in which you've come to, because I just recall coming to visit, and I almost hear this from everybody. It's like, you know, you're in the valley when you hear your voice. And well, you're that person. I mean, I'll be driving around, and I remember in the day you would be waxing poetic about a turkey and cranberry sandwich that the local was making. And I would start, you know, salivating. And there was just such a relationship and comfort to the microphone. And so to hear that you went through the fire.
So here's a funny story. When I was in high school, I was pretty much petrified of speaking in public. And I figured out what classes required an oral book report, and I steered away from them. I wouldn't do them because I'd really clam up. And even to this day, I have a hard time with things like that. I've tried to have a little teeny part in some of the community plays, and oh my God, I've got cheat sheets, you know, on the back of the briefcase and stuff, and I still clam up. It's hard being on a microphone, and people who've had microphones stuck in their face know that. But in reality, I'm talking to a wall, I'm staring out a window if I'm lucky, and I've got computer screens around me, or in the old days, you know, CD decks and stuff. There's really nobody here. And so I have a little imaginary one person that it's just me and him talking. And if I don't have anything to say, I really do try to just shut up.
Who's your person?
Somebody who likes me.
I've made
that person up. I don't know if he, and I really do.
Well, that'd be talking to yourself then. I
really do. And at this point I talked to other young DJs and I said, really, even if you're talking to a whole car of young people driving along out to the lake or something, you're only going in one set of ears at a time. Really, just try and think it's just one person. It's not a big deal. And otherwise it turns into a performance, which I certainly couldn't maintain for more than a couple seconds. So if you're just being you, just talking about stuff.
Well, it also feels like home. What we're sitting in this studio, uh-huh, and you have a cup of coffee, and it, you know, there's personal items around, and you know, it seems like your environment, you're in a setting that is it's personal. And so by default, that relationship flies out over the airwaves.
Yeah. And as it's sort of defined itself that way, it's actually kind of probably become our, you know, our marketing image. I mean, we like it. I enjoy it when somebody comes through town, and I've actually had a lot of disc jockeys or radio people who've sort of discovered us when they were here, asked to come out, and they get the biggest kick out of it because it's really it's not that complicated. I mean, up on the mountain where the antenna and transmitters are and the power, that's high tech. But really, it's just a bunch of really good computers and some gear, but anybody has something similar. It's not that complicated. It's just, it reminds me of, kind of a sand rod or a hot rod where you took the fenders off. And yeah, you got some wheels with no fenders. And if you're wearing a scarf, you could get tangled up. Just, you got to do things kind of carefully, but it's a little bit dangerous and a little bit wild, and it can be fun. And people kind of get that when they see it. They go, oh, man, that looks like fun. And I go, it so is fun.
Well, it feels genuine.
Yeah.
I think in so much of our lives right now, we're kind of guided by marketing and field testing. And this is what we're, there's kind of no over-the-top bells and whistles here. It's fundamentally, I think, feels true.
Well, so that brings up something that, so when we applied for our FCC license, you've got a choice at that point to go non-commercial or commercial. And a lot of people initially asked us, well, why didn't you go non-commercial, which would be like an NPR station. And I love those stations, but they they haven't, a commitment then to have on-air fundraisers and fund drives and stuff. And then also you got to apply for grants and things, which I'm not against either. I mean, I'd like to see some of our tax money come back and go into this radio, but it seemed like an effort that I really couldn't do very well. And but fortunately, here in the Metow, we only, advertise what's going on here. It's just kind of us folks. And they're all projects that I really dig. I see them as almost projects as much as business. And it's so easy to get behind it. And even though we're commercial, quote unquote, it's just like, no, you're talking about, the food raisers and the guys who are, trying to make good food every day in their restaurants or repair your engines. It's just us chickens. And I can totally get behind that just by supporting the local businesses. So we're commercial, but in that way that makes sense to me. And so I don't have any apologies for being commercial, even though when you fill out a form, are you a commercial or non-commercial station, it kind of means something other places in the world, but here in Little Town America, it makes sense to me anyway.
PM.
I moved here almost 2 years ago, and I haven't been able to get radio in my house until just recently. My mom gave me a new radio for Christmas, and I've been able to listen to K-Root in one room of my house, and it's been very refreshing.
I'm using this music here to kind of get you ready for the dance party. So you young dancers, take note, this is Mumbaton. This is a type of dance music that's happening in the big city, apparently. Not that I'm advocating that, but I think it has an appeal.
Thursday, 8:21 p.m.
After this, and one is the you know, what the heck is Don planned next? I had two things. One was a dream I woke up from where I got it that don't worry about what you play. And the other one is how we pay our licensing fees. Because I don't follow what they want me to do. I pay three different agencies. I pay ASCAP, CSAC, and BMI. And they would like to put me down in a category, you know, check one of the boxes. And I won't do it. They go, well, pick one. I go, well, it's...
What do you mean by category? Top 40, R&B, country, Western?
Yeah, adult contemporary. I mean, there's a million of them. Talk radio, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so if you choose one, then they put you down as... then they know who those artists are, and those guys get a check. Well, really, I play a ton of stuff, most of which doesn't get played, and so it's not on their radar. So they always act like, okay, if that's what you're going to do, you have to record every song and the composer for 4 days. Well, this is the day of computers, baby. That's a cinch. I can do that in, you know, about a minute. And so that's what I do, and I send them. It's about, I don't know, it's about a quarter inch, half an inch of paper every couple of months to each of these guys, and they have to look at it. And I don't know what they do with it, what they deal with it, but I'm proud to tell my artists that come through that I turn your name in. You know, I'm one of the guys who turns your name in.
The poor secretary's probably gets the package from KTRT Ashford.
That
son of a bitch.
Yeah. But I've talked to artists who've actually had hits. Like I talked to Dana Lyons, who, you know, who did Cows with Guns. Yeah, that thing is still a hit in Australia. He has received a total of $14 over the whole course of that thing. And I don't have any faith that they can do it, but I don't want to put the radio in jeopardy by not paying my fees. I always pay my fees. I just wish it was going to the right people.
Well, perhaps there's an evolution to the model there.
Well, there definitely should be, with particularly with the capability they have of watching what people listen to with the internet, and people are listening to so many more types of music. And I actually think I have a type of music, a genre of music. I call it like mountain people music, you know. It's what we like to listen to. And depending if you're old or young, you know, it kind of veers one way or the other, but we kind of like our own stuff. We don't like to be dictated to by anybody, particularly pop machines that are telling us what we should do. So
how do you keep your sanity? I mean, that's where I think you are talking to all of us, because I get that there is a conversation going on.
The radio can only afford a certain amount of help, and we stretch it every once in a while when we feel it. But I would love to have more guys and gals coming in. So I cover in between. Fortunately, because it's close to my home, I can walk back and forth. I can go do a little gardening, come back. I can go, you know, do some cooking, come back. But truthfully, I have felt that I wasn't here enough. And so it's pretty much when any waking hour, it could be that I'm in here. And sometimes I will pop in, and it could be the middle of the night, and I might say something. And so it does sound like, holy crap, he's here all the time. He's here a lot, but you know what? I like working. If I worked in, you know, out in the world, I'm at retirement age this year, actually. But I wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't know what to do. So I like working. I am so lucky that I've got this thing, because it's working with music. Music is like in between everything that I say. It's like, oh, that's a slam dunk. It's really a... I'm blessed. I'm just a lucky guy. So I don't mind doing it. I would, but like I say, other people bring other types of music. I try and have as big ears as I can, but sometimes I don't get it. And then after the younger people start bringing it in, I go, oh yeah, I do start to get it. And so I try and be flexible, but hey.
So that mountain music, you mentioned the term mountain music. So you were... You stepped in for a guy who went away for a relief fund back in the 80s and took off from there. Well,
old Cowboy George kind of got himself in trouble with the law. And
as true cowboys should.
Yeah, he was He was better. If anybody remembers Cowboy George, I'm sure they remember him fondly. He was a character and a half. He was really neat, but he had some issues, I guess. But so, yeah, he lost his job, and I inherited it. So I've been the morning guy for an awful long time. Did it there at the old Kevlar station, Bulletproof Radio. And then this one started when my... And then I got the thing changed hands, and I just didn't fit anymore. And my son Dove said, "Dad, I think we can petition the FCC for a radio station." And I go, "Yeah, well, find out, you know." And he did. He was just a kid. And then,
so your son brought the concept of KRU to you?
Yeah, yeah. He looked up the how to do it, how to petition the FCC, and you know, so I got a buddy Rick Mills together, and we were the grown ups, you know, we filed the things and filed the engineering reports, and you know, paid for a few things, and then as time went on, and it took actually about 9 years.
It's kind of like staking your claim, like an early Western.
It's
on the frequency dial.
Yeah, yeah, the FCC is supposed to, you know, monitor these things, and truthfully, they're just supposed to keep us from interfering, our signals from interfering with one another. But in reality, it's got to a business, and they charge a lot of money, goes straight into the general fund, and
so they're the frequency cops, more or less.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, I'd love to see thousands and thousands of low frequency radio stations everywhere. I'd like to see one every few blocks, say in New York City, and every little town have one. And I think that'd be good for music. I think it'd be good for information. I just think it'd be good, and it wouldn't. They wouldn't make the cost so prohibitive. I mean, the equipment itself doesn't need to be that prohibitive. But we paid. I'm not going to say how much it was, but just for the fee, just for the basically a building permit, a go ahead. You know, just yeah, go ahead. But first, cut this enormously huge check first to us.
Did you think your kid was nuts originally, or did it felt right when he said, "Dad, let's do this"? I mean, was it a mutual passion for those records that you were spinning endlessly? Did he come in and sit on your knee back in the day? Like, yeah. What tied you two together for this endeavor?
Yeah, he did. He had gotten sick by then, but we had come back home finally, got out of the hospitals and stuff, and he'd get up with me every morning, and I'd have to go to work about 4 to get there in time and set things up, and he'd come with me. And a lot of times he'd just sleep on the floor down there, but he was always in the radio station. And even though I don't play music, all of my kids play music. So it sort of, the having the CDs around and all the records kind of, I think, helped the house be a musical house. So all my kids are players.
This is Curious Lightning. We'll return for the second half of our interview with Don Ashford when we come back in a moment.
Trying to decide how to play music. I had a lot of music. A lot of it was obscure. I was trying, and the radio was up playing, and I go, "Oh, how do I format it? How do I do it? How do I do this? How do I do that? Oh, is that too much? Is that too far out?" And I woke up it was like a waking dream. It was like, I don't know, 3 in the morning, and I wasn't really awake, and I heard this thing, and it was really odd. And I was really mostly asleep, and it started dawning on me, and it was an ethnographic recording from the rainforest, and it's called Ulahi Pounds the Pith Log, and it's this young lady's voice, and it's a work song. She's working, and and you hear this thump, thump. She's a real pretty sort of lilting voice, and you can hear little kids sort of gurgling in the forest there and stuff. And And I started waking up a little more, and I'm about halfway awake, and I'm thinking, wow, this is trippy. This is really, what is this? And I'm not looking at it in a judging way at all. I don't have enough brain on. I'm just going, wow. And then I start to come to a little bit more, and I'm going, oh, and I identify it. Okay, that's what it is. Well, the right side of my brain or the left side or whatever, the one that would panic is, would have gone, I'd have pulled on my clothes and raced over to the radio and I go, what's going to play next? What's the segue going to be? But it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. So I just laid there and I just thought, okay, I'll just roll with it.
What do you think it was that spoke to you about that song? I know the tribal element seems...
Well, I do like that sort of thing, but it was the what was going to come after? How do I frame music throughout the day? That was what had been on my mind. So what happened was the thing that came next. So it went from this ethnographic recording, very sparse, to ZZ Top doing Sleeping Bag, which opens with this big, giant wah-wah hit. And it was, and partly my heart kind of going, you know, and then it was like a little voice in my head, and it was like, it's okay. And it was like, see, everybody everywhere have always wanted to make music. They need to make music. That lady over there's got a log. Those guys over there in Texas have these electric guitars. It's all okay. Totally set me free. I do try and keep things. I see it as a time of day. When we're working, we want something that jams a little bit more. In the evening, I try and play music that goes along with eating food, reading books, doing something other than plugging yourself into TV. I really try and provide an alternative to television, even though I like videos and stuff.
Well, I think on that thread, that's part of that mountain music and that tribal kind of universal global rhythm that The Root in particular in radio, I think, offers us. It allows us to project our own images in hearing your voice and unique music.
Well, I play a lot of instrumentals too because of that, because I probably have my headphones on too much. I find that if I get too much lyrics, I don't have enough space to think thoughts. And I pretty much do like music on all the time. So I probably play more instrumentals than...
Do you think there's a relationship to the other arts you've worked in, that pottery where there's a timing to the heat, the mixture, and, you know, I would imagine there's a sense of perfectionism there, but then letting go, much like that music popping up and going,
well,
I got to get there and correct that.
Well, truthfully, Dakota, let me make it really clear, because I do not take any of the credit for... I see it as sort of a management thing, and because I've listened to a lot, I give my ears some credit, but really without the musicians, and this thing hinges on these unsung heroes who probably pay the price for getting their music out there, but they can't stop. They're the real artists. I am only trying to just, you know, expose what they're doing to my audience and so on, but everything, the real artistry is those guys, most of whom, particularly the ones that I get paid, that I play, are not getting paid enough.
I almost see you as like an air traffic controller in some way.
Yeah, probably.
They have to fly the planes and create their own voice and vision to speak of, but, you know, they're...
Well, it makes it a lot easier to decide what music is, because it's all good. Somebody, the guy who made this record, put their all in it. It deserves a listen. Now, I may try and manage where it might play in the day, but I really try and find a place somewhere for it. So all my music collections, my nighttime collection, my early morning collection, my midday, my dance collection, they all get really, really big. Almost too big in a way, but I don't want to leave anybody out. I first come in every morning to the quiet studio and kind of, you know, wiggle my mice and have my screens light up and check my mail and have my coffee, it's like, oh, I am the luckiest boy in town, you know? It's just like, oh, this is really, really nice.
I'd imagine it's like you get to treasure hunt. Like, mm-hmm. What can I unearth today?
Yeah, it is not like any other job that, and I've never really had too many real jobs. I generally didn't last very long in those.
One of my favorite moments is when I hear you'll be, you know, playing a song and the word fuck will come out, and it get kind of like, oh, they're gonna get in trouble. But the beauty of it is, without fail, every DJ, yourself included, you come on the air and I just want to apologize, and that just is so human. And who knows what we're gonna get? But listen,
we try and watch that. But yeah, you know that those things are actually community standards, and so we get in trouble if you guys turned us in. The neat thing is nobody's ever turned us in. And that's the deal. I mean, I'm not trying to piss anybody off. I'm not actually trying to promote an agenda. I'm just trying to get through this just like you. I figure I've had a lot of crap happen in my life. I figure people are having crap happen all the time. Let's at least have some music while the crap happens, you know?
And again, that's part of that authenticity that I think we relate to. Seattleite second homeowners, to the farmers, the ranchers, to you name it, everybody in between. And so has that shaped at all the way that you've tried to communicate with that audience?
Well, I don't know if it's consciously shaped. I think I'm a pretty good person to be in the position, because I was a cowboy. I did have a bunch of kids and things were kind of out of control, and I've messed up stuff in front of people and, you know, lived with my embarrassments. and I've had a lot, our family's had a seriously ill child. People can relate to all of those things. I understand the desire for somebody else to come in new and live here in this neat place. I understand all those things, and I'm kind of tied in with the art community, and I think the cowboy community, and I've got kids, so the young people kind of know me, maybe as a dad figure more than a peer, of course, but so I look across the state and other Eastern Washington little towns, and I think they're probably losing their young kids to a large degree. This one here, the general deal is kids will go away for a while, but a lot of them come back. And then lots of other young people discover the place, which gives it a type of vitality.
There is a youthfulness, even in playing the bebop, I feel a youthfulness in hearing that generation of music that was not my own.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's, I every once in a while say it's just all rock and roll to me. And that's kind of, it really is. If I like it, it's rock and roll. It could actually be, classical bassoon music that rocks. And I've got some. I think it's just, wow, it was really interesting. But in some ways, that's just a way that means it's real to me. And so I kind of think it's that way. Even though I realize my taste probably is a little bit too big for some people, but I'll be honest with you, it's a little too big for me once in a while. But
do you curl up in a fetal position at a certain point, or do you go on a vision quest and try and detox? Is there a detox for DJs?
No, but I do. A little bit of me cringes for you. I understand that. I do, but when I'm when I'm playing my, when I'm programming, that's as far as I go. Some of the other DJs, they play stuff that I really cringe for, but I also give them complete freedom to do what they want to do.
Tell me something you don't want to.
Oh dear, let's see. Well, let's see. There's plenty. It's not like there's a shortage. I worry about a lot of things. And at the time I'm running a radio that I want to sort of project a feeling or a help that we're all in this together, it'll all be all right. But in reality, I worry about stuff a little bit. And I think if you've got the right kind of field glasses on and you can look back over time and you can go, okay, yeah, it does work out okay. So the future's probably going to happen that same way. It's going to work out okay, but actually, as I go through the day-to-day, I panic every once in a while. And I think that experience is telling me it is not going to work out okay. And I go, yeah. And so I guess I feel like I'm kind of swimming up a river, going upstream. I'm not positive if I'm losing ground or gaining ground. I don't know that there's a another course of action other than to keep paddling. But that ends up becoming the message, too, that we're all in this together, which I think is the only maybe good news in it, is that we recognize that fact, because everything wants to tell you that oh, crap, your ship's going down, and it's your ship. And a lot of times that's in some ways true, but I've really had my ship go down a couple of times, and I was amazed at how friends and people who I didn't even know, some people cared for us, some people just thought about us, and I find that comforting and kind of important, and I don't know why exactly, but I want that. You know, I want the radio to be a part of that thing moving in that direction. So, yeah, I didn't want to tell you that I worry about things.
Don Ashford, thank you.
Thanks, man.
I've been curious about almost everything.
Turning 70.
What am I curious about? What I was going to grow up to be, if I was going to be successful in life, how I'm going to leave the earth, how I'm going to pass away. I want to know if I'm going to be a monkey when I die, when I come back, if I'm going to be on Noah's Ark. Don't put that on me.
I'm curious what would happen if a radio host held his tongue and said apple.
Ever.
Curious Lightning, curiously connecting us to one another and the environments we inhabit. Well, that's our show. Thank you for joining me today. Curious about something? Send it our way. And a very special thanks to everyone who contributed and made this show possible. We'll see you next time.